Okay, everybody. I think it's 3 minutes past the hour, so we should probably make a start, and perhaps we've got all the people who will be on the call already on. So can we have, firstly, a list of who's present and apologies?
Sure. Just a second. Okay, from the CCNSO, we have Keith Davidson, Christy Spain, Nigel Roberts, and Bill Samick. From Liaisons, we have Cheryl Langdon Orr, Maureen Hilliard, and Sintra Sutnanan. From the GAC, we have Frank March. From Staff Support and Special Advisors, we have Bart Bosfinkel, Kim Davies, Christina Nordstrom, Bernie Turcott, and Gabriela Schittek. And from we have apologies from Patricio Poblete, Jap Ackerholt, Stephen Deerhaek, Martin Boyle, and maybe Paulus Miranda. He would try to join the Adobe room.
That's okay. Were there any other apologies? Is there anyone on the call whose name wasn't mentioned? If not, can we move along and move to the meeting report from the meeting of 2 weeks ago?
Keith, I'm sorry. Can I just remind everybody to state their name before they speak for the transcript? It's easier for the vendors too.
Okay, and I'll try and remember to call them on that if they don't.
Okay, great.
Thank you. My apologies. I'm struggling on a hotel phone today, so I don't have hands free, and I probably will have to stay off mute just to participate. Okay, so moving on, confirmation of the agenda. Nobody's made any comments on the list for any changes. And I think we can work our way through without too many problems, unless anyone has anything to add or change. If not, can we move on to the confirmation of the meeting of the 15th of November? I think they've been circulated for several days now, and I've seen nothing on the list, but does anyone have any comments with regard to the meeting report on any topic other than items that will come up on the agenda today?
No.
Was that a comment?
That was me saying no. Sorry.
Excellent. Okay, moving on then to the big topic of the day, revocation. And I wonder, Bernie, it might be perhaps interesting to start with the Becky and Bernie paper rather than the revocation document, and actually deal with perhaps a slightly higher level view of revocation and see if this might help us when we get back to the detail. Firstly, thanks Becky and Bernie for doing this extra piece of work. And Bernie, do you want to step us through it?
Yes, sir. I'll be glad to do that for you. Just give me a second. I'm making sure everyone has got it up on their screen. And let's get this done here. There we go. And back to this. All right. So after our last few meetings, I think we ended up going through a lot of considerations, and there was a lot of rehashing of considerations. And Becky and I felt that it was worthwhile setting a few things down. From what we understand where we are now. And so this will not be part of any formal document. This is a background document strictly for us. So I don't necessarily think we should spend a lot of time arguing about specific words. If there are clear-cut questions, great. But it's more of a informational document for us at this point to understand why we're drafting some things the way we are, and hopefully it will make sense and be of use. So what we've got here is basically the basics. The working group charter requires us to interpret RFC 1591 using the RFC itself and the GAC principles 2005 as reference points. We had a look at the GAC principles, and I'm not going to read that whole entire paragraph there, but basically what it comes down to is the last line, which says, and this is Becky's interpretation, in this regard, the GAC principles are a statement of law requiring no interpretation. Basically, it says, if there's a law, there's a law. And, you know, people have to apply it as per the mechanisms they have for applying the law. And I think this whole thing we will get back to, because we haven't gotten to this section in the revocation document yet, but it was interesting to sort of get that out of the way up front in our consideration. The next point is point three of the Becky and Bernie document. Next, we need to look at it under RFC 1591. We are talking about revocation. We all agree that Section 3.5 of RFC 1591 says that a delegation can be revoked for persistent problems with the proper operation of the domain. Our task, then, is to determine the meaning of proper operation of the domain under 1591. And basically, we struggle a little bit. The work we had done in Revocation 4.2 raised a lot of concerns with folks. So we had another go at it, and basically went the KISS approach. After distilling the whole thing, what we came up with is really Section 3.5 is about three things. There must not be persistent problems with resolving DNS requests or the outward facing towards the internet operation of a ccTLD. There must not be persistent problems with registering names or modifying server information as per published policy and procedures for doing so. So basically user facing. And there must not be persistent problems with responding to IANA requests in a timely manner. And basically, bottom line, that's what it says. And hopefully we'll translate that into something the working group can accept in the revocation document. But right now that's what we're thinking is a KISS view of this. And I think the words from Becky at the end of that are very useful. Taken together, this suggests a standard to be applied by IANA under 3.5 persistent problems authority. Boils down the requirement that the domain has to work and IANA has to be able to talk to the manager. This requirement is absolute, not conditioned on intent, knowledge, willfulness, negligence, etc. If the problem persists after IANA advises you that the domain isn't working and offers assistance to fix the problem, it can begin revocation procedures. Full stop. Given the absence of any good faith defense and the nature of the remedy, revocation, it is hard to make the case that the requirement that the domain has to work includes the other obligations laid out elsewhere in RFC 1591. In any case, there is no need to do so given the group's interpretation of substantial misbehavior under Section 3.4. So basically, we're trying to just put a fence around 3.5 in RFC 1591 because, as Becky points out, there really is no good faith defense. Basically, it says, got to work, doesn't work, you're told, we're offered a help, and if it still doesn't work, basically we can begin revocation. So it really makes sense to put a rather tight fence around that because it is so absolute. But then we move on to Section 3.4 of RFC 1591 and our interpretation of substantial misbehavior, which is not clearly defined and therefore requires the FOI working interpretation. In 4.1 of the document we're looking at right now, stepping in, we go through the logic we've gone through before, And it still holds that if IANA's going to step in, the only thing it can mean is it can lead to revocations. Under 4.2, the roles and responsibilities of CCTLD manager are enumerated in the preamble to Section 3 of RFC 1591. They fall into two categories, core operational requirements and requirements related to honesty, service, fairness, etc. The section then goes on to lay out two distinct standards, substantial misbehavior and persistent problems in the operation. Of the domain. In this case, because the core operational obligations are covered by 3.5, it makes sense and is consistent with the principles of statutory construction that 3.4 should apply to the other obligations and responsibilities described in the preamble of Section 3. Not making this distinction and applying 3.4 and 3.5 to all of the obligations violates statutory construction rules by reading 3.4 as having no purpose whatsoever because 3.5 would follow it completely. Assuming, as we do, 3.4 has meaning and purpose in RFC 1591, then we look at the responsibilities and obligations not covered in 3.5 as the result is the six requirements listed below. And these are the standard ones that we've gone through and agreed that are listed and are the responsibilities, and there's nothing new there, so I'm not going to go through them in great detail.
Okay, but at this point, I see Nigel has his hand raised, so...
Nigel! Shall we...
No, I'm just getting in line.
Oh, wait.
Been getting your hand up, Nigel?
Yes. So, would everyone form an orderly queue behind Nigel, please? Okay, Bernie, please continue.
Okay. And then Becky goes on to describe this as the obligations relating to honesty, fairness, equity, and duty to serve the community are rather subjective. At the same time, the consequences of substantial misbehavior are rather drastic, revocation. The combination of hard-to-apply standards and serious consequences means that any revocation under substantial misbehavior standard carries potential legal risk for IANA ICANN. Our interpretation must be practical and implementable. And in this case, it makes sense to interpret the scope of this authority cautiously and to look to widely accepted norms that can inform ICANN's use of this authority. The closest analogy we found, and it's a pretty good one, is the standard applied in the context of abuse of power, official misconduct. Laws prohibiting official misconduct generally include an intent willfulness requirement, and because the elements of this offense are reasonably well-developed in law, it comes with statutory and common law precedents that might provide useful guidance for ICANN. So, we then move on to our interpretation of Section 3.4 and 3.5 above. Does not mean that there are gaping holes in IANA ICANN's authority and does not strip the local community of its rights. Indeed, we think the interpretation adequately addresses many of Martin Boyle's concerns regarding a manager that is incompetent, abusing his authority for personal gain, failing to put in the necessary investment, or simply absent. And we go through the examples here, and I don't want to bore, but basically Becky has done a really good job of going through this. So in conclusion, we continue to believe the working group's interpretation of Section 3.4 and 3.5 of RFC 1591 is correct, consistent with statutory construction principle, and has the practical and important virtue of being something that ICANN and IANA can actually implement. We do not think it is inconsistent in any way with the central tenet of the GAC principles, that as a rule, a CCTLD operator should be accountable to the local community, and that the sovereign is a representative of that interest. We also think that applying the persistent problem test to all of the obligations and responsibilities identified in RFC 1591 is dangerous and unworkable. That approach would require IANA ICANN to make legal conclusions that it is not and cannot be qualified to make. Forced IANA ICANN to take on a role reserved for government enforcement of applicable law and subject IANA ICANN to significant liability. So, as I said, don't really want to argue about this because this is not going to be published, but this is a bit of a snapshot from Becky and I relative to what we use as a framework to draft statements in revocation documents. Over to you, Keith.
Okay, thanks, Benny. Nigel.
Thanks. First of all, I just make sure you can hear me okay.
Yep.
Okay. Very conscious of the fact that I'm not going to try and rewrite this paper. I got three points or three things I want to talk about. First of all, is when did this paper go out?
It went out with the agenda the other day.
I don't know why, but I've not seen it before. Probably my fault.
Okay.
So I'm a little bit behind the curve in doing this, but I have read it very quickly. I mean, I'm glad we're not arguing over the exact wording of this, because I would want to defer this to another call. However, I think we can probably manage to go on using this. So that's fine. I think despite the fact I'm half asleep and not really with it, I was slightly under the weather about 5 or 6 hours ago. We can carry on and make progress with this. So it is a very good document. I love it. I don't agree with everything in it. I think 95% is about right, but it's extremely good, and it's exactly the approach that I've been trying in my rather feeble way to argue for the past few weeks and months. So congratulations to both of you on this. It's absolutely brilliant. Doesn't mean I agree with every little dot and comma in it, but I think it's something that we can really make progress and get over some of the stumbling blocks and going around in circles that we've had for the last couple of meetings. Now, there's two things. I'm going to talk about two things in this document, although I'm not proposing this document to be rewritten at this point, although actually I think it's so good that we might want to do that and put it up there as a background document that's informed our discussions, because revocation, again, is one of the most important things. The first point, let me get down to this, is the interpretation that it is a condition, as lawyers use the term. That's something borrowed from Hominet's Terms of Conditions, but it's a condition that lawyers use the term in 3.5, that the CCTLD manager has to respond to IANA in a timely manner. I think there's a red line here. I don't think it says that. And again, I'm going to try and use my experience of being around running a CCTLD manager only 2 years after this was written. Although I didn't see this before it was delegated to us. Something I came across some months or a year or so later. Responding to requests means responding to requests for domain names. It does not mean responding to emails saying from ICANN, we know you're in jail, but we're sending you an email to see if you respond, and if you don't, we're going to redelegate your domain. So that's the first thing. I think there's a misinterpretation of the expression responding to requests. So that's the first point I want to make about this document. Do you want to talk about that before I make the second point, because I've spoken for long enough now?
No, let's gather your pieces together, Nigel.
No, you made that point.
The second point is easy to make as well. And it's interesting. It goes back to what I've been saying all along about if I say there are two limbs under which the IANA can step in, or revoke a domain, that's the substantial misbehavior and the persistent problems limbs. I agree very much with, let me find this in the Burnie and I think it's in section 4 of the Burnie and Becky documents. Let me see.
For Nigel.
Yes, 4.2. Not making this distinction and applying 3.4 and 3.5 to all of the obligations violates statutory construction rules by reading 3.4 as having no purpose whatsoever because 3.5 would swallow it completely. Exactly the point I've been making, and I think this is a compelling argument for reading that the substantial misbehavior test in 3.4 is intended to apply to the process of applying for a CCTLD and the immediate aftermath, because otherwise it would have no purpose because 3.5 would swallow it completely. I see no problem with this because it does not say that substantial misbehavior is not a reason for revoking a domain, because there's a more objective test in 3.5. Are there problems with the domain? Persistent problems with the domain. So I'd like to, even though I'm perhaps somewhat of a minority on this, I think this particular part of the document, I'll call it background document or the assisting document, might get some more support that takes it from being a 40% view to a 55% or 60% view. In many ways, it really doesn't matter whether I'm in the minority on this or not, so long as the discussion was captured within the end document. But I think there is 2 points with the Burnie and Becky document.
Okay. Thank you, Nigel. And yes, look, I think in terms of this document, this is a first read of it, and so it will remain on our agenda for at least one more meeting, and I think...
I was hoping we could deal with it right now in 5 seconds.
Well, but I think the important issue here is this is trying to achieve a background understanding that might help our friend Martin come to grips with what I think we as a group have sought to determine, and also clarifying some of the suggestions you've made along the way too, Martin and Nigel, and also to try and assure our GAC colleagues that we're not trying to usurp their authority over a sovereign right and so on. So, it's a multi-purpose document. I don't know that we'll ever publish it. So, as Bernie has said, fine tooth combing it is not the issue, but having it in useful standing. So, if in doubt about a part of the interpretation of revocation later, you can refer back to this document and say, now I remember why we did that. So that, I think understanding that intent is probably quite important. But thanks for the discussion. And, I see you've re-raised your hand, Nigel.
Well, I'm just conscious that somebody else might want to speak, first of all. Just make it very quick. I think this is so good that if we can tweak it a tiny little bit, although we won't put it as part of our report, we should perhaps find it in the background. There's a concept on the continent, but not in common law parts of the world, whereby if anybody is looking at what the meaning of a particular European directive or law is, they can also look at what, unfortunately, is a French word for this, travaux préparatoires, I can't even say it this time of morning, preparatory works. And I think this is so good that we should put a little bit of effort into tweaking it ever so slightly. in the event that it ever becomes useful to anybody in the future. It doesn't have to be part of the formal report, but we can just capture the 2 points I've made in this document in some way. It's that good that we can, we can, obviously, as everything's public that we do, provide access to it along with the report.
Okay. Well, I think Bernie's probably got enough feedback from you there.
Oh, we'll do our usual thing, Nigel. I'll chat with Becky and we'll exchange versions and we'll see if we can add a few notes in there that would.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I mean, actually, I don't want to bat this backwards and forwards, and I think it's pretty standalone, and I agree with 95% of it.
Excellent.
Okay, excellent. Does anyone else have any comments? If not, Frank, could I specifically ask you if you have the opportunity to run through this with Suzanne and actually make some comments on our next call or on the list as well as to the, given that it's not a document that is likely to, well, it may end up being published, but at this stage as a non-publishable document, as to whether you agree in principle and whether it will help in your understanding of revocation.
Yeah, I've got no problem with that, Keith. I actually think I agree with Nigel. It's a pretty good document. I can't see any reason to disagree with 10% of it, to be honest. Somebody who's of a more critical mind than mine might perhaps see some problems with it. So showing it to Suzanne, getting a reaction to it, is not a bad idea at all.
Yep. And in fact, if she's in Dubai, we might be able to make that a...
No, I'm afraid she's not going to be in Dubai.
Okay. Never mind.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Benny.
Okay, I'm going back on to mute.
Oh, thanks, Frank. So, Benny, we'll do some more work and then...
All right, so our next document will be Revocation 431 after my minor blunder this weekend. As noted, the only changes versus 4.2 is Section 524 and Section 532. So let's go right down to 524. Da-da-da-da-da. Almost there. Here we go. All right. So, hopefully I got it right this time. So, we're back to defining substantial misbehavior. 5241 is misbehavior and was slightly amended at our last meeting, seemed to be okay, but we'll go over it one more time. The working group interprets misbehavior in this context to refer to conduct involving the failure of a designated manager to, one, carry out the necessary responsibilities of that role, comma, or the failure of a designated manager to, two, carry out those responsibilities in the manner required by RFC 1591, period. A TLD manager would then appear to have misbehaved if it willfully neglects to carry out the duties of a TLD manager and or in carrying out those duties willfully engages in misconduct to such a degree and without reasonable excuse or justification as to amount to an abuse of trust placed in him or it by virtue of his or its duties as a CCTLD manager, full stop. Nigel.
Nigel, you're...
Sorry, it takes a second for my phone to tell me that it's unmuted itself. I take it I can be heard.
Yep, you can now.
Good. I appreciate the attempt to restore the meaning of the interpretation. Like Martin, I'm getting fed up of this word willfully, particularly in 1.1.1, but for different reasons. It's just stylistic reasons, not for reasons of meaning. This is something we can do by email offline, if that's acceptable. But 5.2.4.1.1, however many ones. I think we could remove one of the willfullies and replace it by an or something like that, but I'm not going to do it on the fly at 3 in the morning, 3:30.
Well, I think what we said, Nigel, is we all agree this needs a good cleaning up. And
yeah, sure. That's an in-passing point. The main point is that when I was objecting to you directly a couple of days ago, Bernie, it wasn't missing from that section that I was complaining about. It was the first sentence in the parent's paragraph. So the bit between the word the and the first full stop before the ATLD manager would then appear to have misbehaved, that is not really the correct interpretation of misbehavior. And this, again, I think is one of the issues that Martin and I have not agreed upon. I don't believe you can redefine the word misbehavior to suit ourselves. I believe the starting point has to be the dictionary and the way not just courts, but official bodies have interpreted the word misbehavior in regard to an office holder. And I'm not actually that confident that that sentence, the first sentence in the immediately superior paragraph, really does capture this. Misbehavior is not the failure of the designated manager to carry out the role. That's, in a way, what 3.5 is all about. That's persistent problems. So there's always a limb to be in RFC 1591 to find a route to revocation through what's defined in 5.2.4.1, the superior paragraph. But I don't believe that's the interpretation of the expression misbehavior or even substantial misbehavior. It's behaving badly by the standards of what you should be doing. That's what misbehavior is, and we're not capturing it.
Okay, Nigel. I thought that this was the text that you had previously actually agreed and consented to. So I'm not sure. Is this a change of heart or...
It's not a change of heart. I just think, originally we had intentional failure or willful failure. That was the point where I think where the willfulness should have been. And that sort of did capture it as far as I was concerned. I think there might be a better way of doing it, but I'm not going to do a Martin and drill down too much on and get too hung up about it so long as the overall meaning's coming out here. But the way this is written, it simply is just a rehash of what persistent problems is, or a thing of persistent failure. But misbehavior is something different. Misbehavior is the good stuff that you put in the background document about using the inequitably doing something for personal gain. In other words, I don't know, I can't think of a good example at this point in time, but the key to it is the word equitably in RFC 1591, doing something inequitably. That's misbehavior.
Okay, thanks, Nigel. Let's hear from some others. I sort of thought that we might have got past this point, but let's hear from some others. And I see Bill and Chris have their hands raised. So Bill firstly, and then Chris.
I missed the last call, so maybe this got by me and there's a simple answer. But I'm a little concerned about 5.2.4.1.1, parentheses 1, as to what exactly we mean when we say the necessary responsibilities of that role. I don't know that we have anything to refer back to, and so we're sort of opening a can of worms here. Can Bernie fill me in, or is this just the phrase that we put in there and we'll leave it to someone else to figure out?
All the things we identified as the 6 points, which we talked about in the previous document,
are listed in
section 5.2.3 above.
The necessary
and
responsibilities.
We go through the document, we actually state those things more clearly.
So somewhere in this document, these necessary responsibilities are spelled out?
Yes, sir. Yep.
Okay, it would be helpful to point that out in this section, referring back to whatever, or capitalizing it, or the way they do in agreements, you know, where they put capitals on things that have specified meaning.
Good call. We'll note that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Bill. Chris.
Hi, Keith. Thanks. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I just want to. I wanted to try and onto to Nigel's point, if I could. Couple of things. The reference to defining misbehaviour as courts have done in respect to the behaviour or misbehaviour of an officer, quote unquote, which I think is the term Nigel used, is fine, but doesn't apply in this case. There is no recognized legal entity that is an officer or as a CCTLD member. Officer with a capital O has various different legal meanings, but it doesn't in this case. We have no choice but to define what we believe it to be the requirements of being a manager, and then what we say is misbehavior. Second point is that I think it's inappropriate to use the term willfully in respect to misbehavior, but completely appropriate to use the term willfully in respect to substantial misbehavior, and that I think is the way that it's intended to be read in this particular sense. I'll rephrase that. You've got to have willfully used in respect to the misbehavior, because willful neglect rather in respect to the misbehavior. Because if you don't have willful neglect, then a mistake can be deemed to be misbehavior. And the whole point about the use of the term willfully is that it takes out the possibility of a mistake. It becomes substantial if it's repeated. So at the risk of taking this down a dark alley, I wonder if, Nigel, I could ask you to explain to me again why you think the use of the term willfully in the sub-paragraph isn't appropriate but would be in the main paragraph.
For the reasons you just stated, Chris, let me walk you through it, and I think you might be with me. I'm not suggesting removing willfully from the subordinate paragraph in intent or meaning at all. I'm suggesting removing two of them and replacing them by one, and for stylistic reasons. That was the point I made to Bernie, and I think that's sort of noted for future. Okay. So going to the superior paragraph, what you need to do is to isolate the first sentence. And when you isolate the first sentence without any indication of intention, you then produce a sentence saying the working group interprets misbehavior to mean the thing of the two things that you don't think it means.
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
All right. The first sentence defines misbehavior as merely failing, as mere mistake, and I don't think it is.
No, it doesn't. It says that it interprets misbehavior as conduct involving failure to carry out the responsibilities. Hold on a second. Nigel, let me have a look at this in a little bit of silence for a while, and I'll get back to it. Let's move on to something else.
I'm happy and content with that.
Okay, and could I remind speakers, particularly if you're entering into a two-way conversation, to introduce yourself for the record so the transcribers have a clue. For the record, that was Nigel Roberts and Chris Despain debating. Nigel, are you happy then, or did you have another point in this context? If not, I'll put hands down. Bernie, can we move on?
Yes, sir. So then we move on to substantial misbehavior. Substantial misbehavior would involve misbehavior as defined above, that is either egregious or persistent, and would be 52.421, the knowing, repeated, material failure to perform the necessary responsibilities of the designated manager in a manner that is equitable, just, and or honest. Yes, there's a T missing. Or, subsection 2, performing the necessary responsibilities of a designated manager in a manner that imposes serious harm or has substantial adverse effect on the local or global internet community. In this context, someone's playing with the text. Serious harm and substantial adverse effect should be evaluated in the context of the IANA contractor's continued focus on DNS security, stability, and described in the previous section. Full stop. So, questions, thoughts, comments?
Everyone's either gone to sleep,
fallen asleep,
or are in stunned silence and acceptance. So let's assume the latter.
Shall we carry on, sir?
Yeah, please continue.
All right, so I guess we'll move on to Section 5.3, which is the other change, leaving Section 5.2 for the moment, since the next big chunk of the changes to this version are there. Section 5.3 deals with Section 3.5. Sorry for all those that are dyslexic. For persistent problems with the proper operation of the domain. And then we've got all of Section 3.5 of RFC 1591 listed. And basically, what we do then is, based on the background document we looked at earlier. So, persistent problem. Oxford Dictionary, adjective, continuing to exist or occur over a prolonged period. Persistent rain will affect many areas. Persistent reports of human rights abuses by the military. And then the working group interprets persistent as being modulated by the severity of the problem. A CCPLD being down for a one-month period continuously should be considered a persistent problem. A manager failing to reply to an IANA request within 1 month as a unique event is not a persistent problem. So, we'll take a break here and go to Nigel. Caller number one, you're on.
And it appears you might be still muted, Nigel.
Your line has been unmuted. It has.
Now you're
I don't have a problem with what you're trying to say in 53212, fortunately, but I do have a problem in understanding it, and I think other people will as well. Persistent means happening a lot, more than once, many times. The first sentence is kind of this modulated business. I'm having problems with it, just the same way I have problems with sponsoring organisations, because I don't understand the definition of it, and I think perhaps there's a better way of putting it.
Is my mathematician's brain, and I'm certain there is a better way to put it, but this is brand new text, and as usual, it's the general concept we're trying to get across here.
But I think the point about the point that Bernie's trying to make with persistent is if you have persistent rain, it doesn't mean that there are several showers of rain. It means it doesn't stop raining. So the problem has become persistent by time, not by repetition. It's a continuum of rain.
I'm not sure that RFC 1591 actually says this. I don't think the interpretation actually says this. So what it's actually saying is that if there are persistent problems with the domain, It doesn't say it's modulated by the severity of the problem. I think you've got to test it, you've got to go over that the problem has to be important enough. But once you've got over the important problem, you can either have one very big problem or lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of medium-sized problems. Small ones would be under the de minimis rule anyway.
Not arguing that.
Okay. Then I really didn't understand what you're trying to say, the first sentence. And would it hurt if you removed the first sentence or at least said something about the problem should be big enough to be bothered about?
We can work on something like that.
Okay, cool.
Just trying to make the difference that small things don't count. But like Keith was saying, my point for persistence and the distinction we're trying to make is persistence can be a number of occurrences of an issue over a period or a continuous occurrence of one issue over a longer single period.
Yeah, and I think in that regard the examples work quite well to explain. Anyway, I think noted, Nigel, that some editing would be useful, and can we move on?
Okay, we'll move on then, sir.
Yes, please.
Okay. So then, having looked at this under the heading of, and just to be clear, we were just looking at trying to identify persistence in the previous section. The problems, you'll recognize this, it's been reworked to sort of fit in the context of our document, but it's the 3 points we made. We already have the point from Nigel that he doesn't believe the responding to IANA request is the way we're interpreting that, and we haven't finished arguing about that, so I don't know where we'll fall on that. But right now, from the initial point, what we've got is, or what we're proposing, is the working group interprets problems in section 3.5 RC 1591 as referring to three specific situations. Failure to consistently and correctly resolve the INETS request for its subdomains from the Internet. Failure to consistently and correctly offer services for registering domain names or modifying server information for domain names as per published policy procedures for doing this by the manager. And failure to respond to IANA requests in a timely manner. So, basically, these 3 points have just been translated over to this segment of the document. Questions, comments? Okay.
Yeah. Oh, there's a hand up from Nigel and then a hand up from Kim. So, Nigel first.
I don't think there's something that, funny way of putting it, I don't think that there's nothing that can be said about the breakdown of communications between the IANA and the designated manager. I think that does fall under one of the requirements here, but I don't think the one that we're using to as the authority for it is the right one.
Okay.
Does that make more sense? Bernie, if you want to, we can talk about this offline. I think we can keep some of what you're trying to say, but find I see a different part of the paragraph as providing the authority for it.
Okay, thank you, Nigel, and I think Bernie will take you up on that offer. And Kim.
So I just raised my hand, so there'll be more voices on the call. I think Nigel really captured the point I would think I was going to make, which is that I think, you know, a breakdown in the communication between the parent and the child in the DNF is a problem. Just as expect if a registrant within a TLD stopped responding to any inquiries from the registry, that would become an issue over time. So I don't consider it a binary proposition, but some language that recognises that the TLD manager needs to have a relationship with the IANA to properly operate the domain, I think is important.
Yep. No, I think, and that is, as we've discussed in the past, I think that is an essential part of the expectation of the framework, that there will be an ongoing relationship between IANA and the CCTLD operator. Point well made. Thanks, Kim. Bill has his hand raised, so Bill.
Yeah, I'm sort of tending towards Nigel's point of view in terms of responding to requests. I think those are DNS requests, actually. If you read the RFC, you know, with a magnifying glass. But that doesn't change the fact that the need for internet connectivity, as RFC 1591 requires, and the requirement to keep the central internet registry advised of the status of the domain are important requirements on the manager. It's possible that the way this has been phrased isn't as felicitous as we would like, but perhaps with a little recrafting, it could be fixed.
More than welcome, as usual. You know, guys.
Okay, well, I think there was a suggestion from Nigel that he'll work with Bernie. If we can have a look on the next call at a revision of text, and if we haven't progressed, we might set up a small drafting group to rework on that, if that's all right with everybody. Okay, I think with no further questions, please continue, Bernie.
Thank you, sir. The next point is 5323. This has not been rewritten. It's basically the original one of gluing persistent and problems together. Ongoing or repeated problems, as defined above, which when considered as a whole, impose serious harm or have substantial adverse effect on the global or on the local or global internet community. Sorry, fading here a bit, guys. In this context, serious harm and substantial adverse effect should be evaluated in the context of the IANA contractor's continued focus on the DNS security and stability, as described in the previous section. So, basically, we've just tried to keep it in sync with the language we were using in the previous section when talking about substantial misbehavior, and ensuring that we're not talking about little things. Or maybe, I think it's Nigel who put it best a few meetings ago, a bunch of little things can add up to be a serious problem if there's enough of them, or it can be a big thing, but we're not talking about a single occurrence of a small thing being considered a persistent problem under this area. So, questions, thoughts, comments?
There don't appear to be any forthcoming questions
Wow.
or comments.
Okay.
Please continue.
You can't tell, but I'm very excited at this point.
Well, I think we can now.
Thanks for sharing, Bernie.
You know, Cheryl, always looking to share with you. All right. Well, at this point, what I don't have anything new. I mean, basically, I think we had Chris that was reading over section 524, was going to discuss with Nigel. We've got the communications issue with IANA, and we've gone over our thinking of the document. And all the rest of the stuff, basically, we've gone over and we can argue about again. But in light of what we've done, I'd like to, and the information we've gotten over the other meetings, actually not waste people's time, because I think we got some new information. I'd like to redraft some of these sections and not put everyone through this one more time, if that's okay with you, sir.
That's fine by me.
All right, so we're done with the revocation document for today, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. Does anyone else have any inputs to the revocation document as it is? Nigel?
I'd just like to express what delight it's been to do this at 3 in the morning. Now, what I mean is that it's just gone so efficiently and so well today, and thanks to Bernie and Becky and to everybody else who's been involved in that.
Thanks, Nigel. And yes, I think Becky and Bernie.
All right, then. So over to you, sir.
Thanks, Bernie. Look, I think we have made substantial progress, but of course we don't have Martin on the call, and he has been constantly concerned at the way the text has been moving. I think we've made some progress behind the scenes during the week as well, and so let's hope, firstly, that we can have a full group on the next call, which might be difficult given that a number of us are in Dubai and may be very distracted the week after next on the end outcomes of Wicket, but let's hope we can have a call with a meaningful number on it and see if we can't wrap up some of the stuff. And Nigel, is your hand re-raised? Do you have a further point? No, hand's gone down.
Well, Keith, this is Dottie. I just want to say that I am here, even though I haven't said anything.
Oh, thanks, Dottie. We'll note that.
I got in a bit late.
Yeah. Oh, we'll note that for the record, but I didn't hear the beep of anyone additional coming in, so sorry to...
Well, it did. It beeped.
Welcome. Okay, any other comments regarding revocation? If not, can we then look at our next meeting, 13th of December at UTC 1100, so 2 weeks from today, plus 8 hours, talk to you all then. Thank you all for your participation, and unless there's anything else from anyone, I'll call the meeting to a conclusion, and thank you all for your participation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Keith. Thanks all.
See ya.
Cheers. Bye, everybody.
Sweet dreams. Bye.